Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today, I am joined by me. Yes, I am solo podcasting. Before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com as well. Tis the season, and as many of us are at this time of the year inspired to share the love by way of trinkets and tokens of our affection, I would like to direct you to all of my books, which make phenomenal gifts. Of course, there are the quantum languaging books, which we're actually gonna be going through today. There's Pop Propaganda and Illustrated Guide. The big one, the big giant announcement that I've been so excited to finally be able to share with you is that yes, I am a transformational coloring book for kiddos, grown-ups, and everyone in between is finally ready in its revamped, thoroughly updated, infinitely more colorable version. This book has been such a labor of love, born out of the I Am calendar. And it was a cult classic. It featured, well, I made up all new holidays for people who were really, truly deserving of modern day reverence, acknowledgement, recognition, and inviting us into an actual celebration of these people versus a passive day to like not go to the bank, not go to the post office, not go to work the way holidays are done here in the States. So this was a total revolution, evolution, plus it tracked all the moon cycles, the solstices, the astrology. It had Mercury retrogrades. It was such a cool calendar, is my point. And as much as a small group of people fervently loved it, it was a money loser every year. Analog wall calendars in a time of digital everything, ultimately are the no-go decision that inspired me to turn it into a book. So that became the Yes I Am coloring book, except all I did was I took each tiny drawing. So every page was a different intention. I am confidence. I am optimal health. I am now. I am magic. I am love, for each month. And then each one of those themed pages would have like anywhere from like 20 to 35 little tiny drawings all clustered together, as I'm prone to doing it. So the book is each of those individual illustrations on its own page. Now, the first version, it didn't occur to me to actually make the illustrations colorable, even though I was making a coloring book. Sometimes this is how it goes. And as I've gotten feedback throughout the years that the drawings weren't very colorable, I finally summoned up the energy and the strategy to redraw every single page for optimal colorability. So I'm so excited that this book is finally ready. It is a transformational coloring book. Every single illustration is intended to uplift, to inspire, to encourage, to help us expand. It is totally G-rated. It has been thoroughly vetted by parents of young children. Everyone gave it the go-ahead, and super wonderful for grown-ups. So that book is on sale now on Amazon. And if you're not feeling aligned with an Amazon purchase, email me through my site. I might have other options for you. And this coloring book makes a phenomenal gift for literally everyone on your holiday gift giving list. So do check it out over on Amazon or through my site, dannykatz.com. Okay, that does it for our pre-show housekeeping. Where to start? I have a few things on the docket for us today. We'll kind of meander our way in. I'm okay with all of the syntax spazziness. I'm actually inspired to start with the languaging stuff today because I'm surrounded in false dichotomies. And so Yeah, since I know this is up for a lot of us, we're gonna start with the whole false dichotomy situation. So, it was two, well, it was one personal experience and then a conversation that I was having that inspired this unpacking of the false dichotomy, both as a mind control propaganda technique as well as a linguistic poop show. So, the first one, which I think will hit home with a lot of us, is super long story short, there was some family drama this week between, or in last week, and it wasn't actually drama. I want to give myself props. It was a painful, it was just painful. And yay for emotional maturing. There was no drama around it. Super long story short, my uncle made the executive decision to throw away all of my mother's possessions, including all of the family photographs, without checking in with me, including, and it doesn't matter. When I asked him for him, and he said very like brusquely, "Oh, those are in the garbage. Yeah, we threw those away." And it was like a knife in my heart. I'm like, even the framed photographs of my dad and me? Yeah, those are gone. Okay, so then I was like, why would anyone do this? I could tell that it was the day after the election, and the conversation was preceded by a whole bunch of like stage 12 freaking out, disasturbating about Trump winning, even though I didn't ask him about like politics or anything like that. The conversation was just hijacked, and then I interrupted whatever that insanity was to ask about the photographs, and then you all know the rest because I've already caught you up to speed. So in the ensuing days, because I just said, okay, cool. In the ensuing days of like, of course, feeling it, grieving it, examining it, why do I care? I mean, the upside is the lightening of my load, and like the there's not even an option to get like lost in nostalgia bubbles. And this happened to me, I don't know, however many years ago, maybe a decade ago, when I left a garage sale that a friend and I were having to go pick up more stuff. And while I was gone, a box that I hadn't realized got put in, which had every single piece of original art that had hung in galleries that I'd made, had sold for a dollar. And it was all gone. And it was like, anyone who's been in a fire knows. I have plenty of friends who've gone through that. And this is obviously like a much lesser extent. And there is a certain freedom that comes with not having these kind of fence posts of the past. I always see linear time as these, like, yeah, putting pins in infinity. Anyway, so I had a conversation with, clairvoyant advisor about this because I didn't understand A, why my uncle would make this choice, and B, why it would be so like, it wasn't just like short and abrupt in telling me that it felt like there was a little bit of glee, like he was excited to tell me that he threw everything away. So when I asked her about it, I was just like, is this personal? Is this fixable? Like, this really hurts my feelings, but I'm getting the sense that there's no point in opening a conversation with him because I don't even know what this is about. And so she tapped in and she's like, yeah, it's not personal. It's about Trump. And it's about because you don't hate him, you're on the wrong side, you're not on his team, you're his enemy. And so he's just caught up in that mind virus. And I asked if there was any fixing it. Well, before I get to that, it totally resonated. And I will say the last time that my uncle and I like got along and had a good conversation was I was at dinner at his place around like 2017, and he was ripping Trump, just rip, 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 rip. And I was Trump neutral. I've been consistently Trump neutral. And after that, my mom told me that like he didn't want me to come over for dinner anymore, and that that was like really off-putting that I wasn't down on shit-talking a person I've never met. So it didn't shock me. And then I asked the clairvoyant, like, well, is there any coming out of this? Like, will this be remedied? She said that his spirit said that the only way to repair this is if she, meaning me, makes an overt gesture in the world, like takes definitive action to prove that like I hate Trump and I'm on team leftist. But it's really framed around Trump. It was so it was weird, and it resonated as true. And I'm sharing this because I think we're all being affected by this, and I'm not even pro Trump. But just the mind virus, right? The Wetiko, which Paul Levenant talked about. If you haven't seen that or listened to that podcast, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. But the like infinite heartbreaking sadness of human beings and loved ones and family members just being so affected by whatever this mind virus is that they give their allegiance to ideological programming over lived real life experiences. It's very insulting. It's very hurtful. I mean, we know what it is. It's super gross. And so since I write about this false dichotomy, if you're not with us, you're against us, right? That's what it is. Like, I'm not even against him. And I don't think being for Trump means that I would be against him, even if I was, which I'm not. But like, who we vote for is not, we know what it is. It's not an identity construct. It's a simple choice. One more example I want to share before I get into my own written perspective on false dichotomies is Emily and I were podcasting yesterday, and we were deconstructing Tulsi, but through the lens of like a potential larger scale India op, which is an idea that Emily started exploring. So we started unpacking that on the show. It's super fun. And we were talking about Tulsi, who's like, you know, very consistently flip-flopped on a lot of issues, as so many politicians do, right? I don't think it makes her different than any politician. I think that's just what politicians do. But she was talking about her anti-LGBTQ, which I just heard, this clip is circulating right now of Barry Weiss on Joe Rogan, like years ago, when she called Tulsi a sod toady and didn't know what the word toady meant. It's interesting how like this is coming back, but obviously it's because, you know, her relationship to the Trump administration and let's pull people down in whatever way is possible. So it's, I get it, it's relevant, it's timely, but there's a large circulating story around Tulsi, which Emily repeated yesterday, and it was just casual, she didn't mean it that way, where she's being categorized as anti-LGBTQ. And this is like classic false dichotomy. Now, this was before she'd flipped her views on gay marriage, right? But the issue, and if you look up Tulsi's perspective on this, is that she had felt, she's since changed her mind, that the institution of marriage was for heterosexual men and women who are going to procreate, right? I'm paraphrasing, but she thought it would be disrespectful to the original intent of the institution of marriage. That, whether we agree with that perspective or not, I have no respect for the institution of marriage on any level whatsoever. And my perspective is if a club doesn't want me in it, then I'm gonna go start a better, more fun club. I'm not gonna like whine and like throw 1,000 tantrums until the stupid, outdated, lame club that didn't want me in the first place lets me in. Like, it's so lame. But regardless of that, she never made any comments that were indicating that she had issues with gay people, that she, any anything that lined up as an anti-LGBTQ alphabet soup stance. And this, another classic false dichotomy. They take a stance that has absolutely nothing to do with, like, it generally, it's the whiny victim marginalized thing these days, right? But it doesn't have to be that. But it's just a stance that's like, these are my thoughts on this thing that I really love and feel inspired to protect. And then propagandists and mind viruses come in and they totally conflate that with some anti, you know, the marginalized thing stance or vax or climate change or whatever stance, which is creating like a false quantum entanglement and mind fucking people and mind controlling people into this divide, right? And that's really the function of these false dichotomies. So I want to read us first from Pop Propaganda and Illustrated Guide, which is on sale now in print. I think it's just in print. And this one you can get on a bunch of platforms outside of Amazon, including Barnes & Noble, if that's more fun for you. Okay, but and. This book features 37 tools, tricks, and techniques that the social engineers use to attempt to propagandize us. So if you're concerned about fake news, misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, this is the book you want to be reading. It's for teens 13 and up. And this is definitely the book you want to be getting your teens because it teaches us the tools and techniques that are being used to divide us, to control us, to enslave us, to disempower us. It teaches us how to recognize misinformation, how to recognize disinformation, how to recognize fake news so that we're not gonna be pulled into their trickery. So I just wanted to give us the false dichotomy perspective from a propaganda point of view, and then we'll go deeper into it in the language of betterarchy. Deep linguistic word nerdery. Okay, so reading from Pop Propaganda and Illustrated Guide, false dichotomy. A false dichotomy is a specific kind of reductive oversimplification in which two diametrically opposed points of view are presented as the only options when other possibilities are available. Either you are with us or you are against us is a classic example of a false dichotomy, as is, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. False dichotomies aim to fragment the world into two oppositional categories. The specific polarity constructs are relevant. The goal is to force a divide, to coerce people into choosing sides and then injecting tension and ill will between them. Spot on, right? For both of my examples. So for those watching with our eyes, there's a little illustration here. We have two kids and a passing by adult, and the kids say, "Want to buy some candy for charity, mister?" And the guy says, "No, thank you." And then after he passes, the kids say, "Charity hater." And then in parentheses, it says, "He's diabetic," right? So it's like these false dichotomies are assuming the worst and creating these polarities and projecting them onto other people. But in terms of the narcissism of this type of fallacious thinking, of this type of, you know, victim consciousness or us against them consciousness, is it always paints us as the center of the multiverse, right? So, you know, instead of heliocentric world, it would be a, you know, me-centric world. And whoever's, you know, proposing this false dichotomy, so let's say it's Tulsi and the anti-LGBTQ, right? That story is going to be created by those who are identifying as, you know, the Alphabet Brigade or allies. And because they're looking through the world with this lens of perception, right? If I'm an LGBTQ ally, that's my identity construct, then I'm going to be looking for instances and circumstances wherein I can stand up and defend LGBTQ alphabet people so that I have a mission, so that I have a purpose, so that I'm being a good ally, right? Because that's my identity construct. So if that's the case, then I'm looking at the world through, let's pull up some lenses. through my false dichotomy lenses, through my LGBTQ alphabet street ally lenses. And as I'm looking at the world through these lenses, I'm just like, where can I find anti-LGBTQ affronts that I can stand up for and make a hullabaloo about and really truly get attention for doing so that I can prove that I'm an LGBTQ alphabet street ally and I'm a virtuous good person, right? So just helping us recognize when these techniques are at play, another marker is going to be this narcissism, where the world revolves around the LGBTQ alphabet psyop. And so anyone who's speaking to their perspective, I want to be clear, this is not my perspective, on the sanctity of heterosexual marriage for the purposes of whatever, family building, procreating, doesn't even matter. That devotion to what that person deems the integrity of that construct is then conflated into this anti-alphabet stance that in my experience is rarely true, but it's certainly divisive and certainly doing all of us a disservice. Same for in the instance with my uncle, right? Because he's aligning himself with this ideology that is, you know, anchored in large part by an anti-stance against this person, I have become the enemy because of all the ridiculous associations that have, you know, the public has been propagandized to swallow as relates to people who don't hate Trump, you know, racists, sexists, rapists, white supremacists. I mean, the list is deplorables, stupid. The list is really endless. So let's break it down through a more granular quantum languaging, language of betterarchy lens so we can see what's really going on. So reading from the language of betterarchy, which is also on sale now in print, in ebook, and in audiobook narrated by me, makes a fantastic gift for all the critical thinkers on your holiday gift giving list and is available again, Amazon and all the other spots. Just do a DuckDuckGo search and I'm sure you'll find a bookseller that feels aligned for you. And if not, just message me. Okay, so this is from the conflict section, the language of conflict. And it comes under the umbrella of proving we are right versus seeking to understand. So that's kind of like a subcategory of a certain class of conflict languaging words and phrases that are all around proving we're right. It also includes the completely antiquated blood sport of debate, which, I mean, what we've been seeing in the political sphere for at least, you know, the past couple elections, they're not even debates. I mean, whatever happened this time with the fact checking and the guard railing and the interrupting, like, I don't even know what that was. But even if it was real debate, like watching politicians cling to their own ideas and discount the ideas of others to prove they're right, to me is not proving themselves worthy of leadership. Truly empowered, conscious leadership, to me, would be engaging active dialogue, proving to me that they were hearing what the other people's point of views and interests and seeing how well they could diplomatically create solutions that served the greatest good of everyone involved. To me, that's betterarchical leadership, right? That's betterarchical communication demonstration while vying for these highest civil servant positions. I'm holding the vision of us evolving out of this silly debate nonsense sometime very soon. And I want to start us off with just a general overview of the proving we are right versus seeking to understand concept. The proliferation of conflict languaging has turned discourse into a battlefield wherein we are programmed to blindly defend our ideas and our indoctrination instead of pausing to consider that we might not know every single thing there is to know about every single thing, and that perhaps, just perhaps, the other perspective might be valid, relevant, or gasp, true. I probably would have been better reading it if I just went, oh, but I'm not a professional reader, so this is how we're doing it. When we defend our ideas and go the distance to win our exchanges, we close ourselves off to other points of view. Proving we are right instead of seeking to understand is like erecting electric is like erecting electric fencing around our worldviews while unconsciously alleging that we are done learning, done expanding our points of view, and done considering other possibilities. Alternate perspectives? No way, man. We have it all figured out and have already assessed anything and everything that could possibly be relevant, and thus have no room, no space, no inclination, and no interest in gleaning any additional information or perspectives, or in educating ourselves beyond our current storehouse of knowledge. Because we're omniscient, damn it. And I want to pause here because this is exactly what we're seeing in the wake of the election, right? I have yet to see anyone who was vying for Harris to win reach out to me or anyone I know to ask, why aren't you freaking out? Like, is there something here I'm not seeing? I'm not seeing anyone demonstrate an ounce of self-reflection, an ounce of considering that maybe they've got it wrong, and maybe the people that they're demonizing have points of view that are worthy of exploring, looking into, asking about, right? This is the piece of the puzzle that's missing right now. Like, why is this so loud and distorted and hysterical? Because this step is being missed. Because we're still waiting for the people who are freaking out to come to their senses, get humble, get curious, and avail themselves to different points of view. Any day now, guys, I swear it's gonna happen any day. So, endeavoring to prove we are right instead of seeking to understand the other person's point of view is ego in its purest, most base form. It goes a little something like this. We align ourselves with a perspective that resonates as true with us. Someone proposes an alternative perspective that rubs up against said belief, and this is the crossroads that will determine whether we are asleep or we are awake. How we respond in this moment will show us whether we are unconsciously acting out our hierarchical indoctrination or are engaging from a balanced, betterarchical anchor point that holds space for diversity of thought and belief, and that doesn't perceive differences as threats. Those under the spell of hierarchy will leap to defend their beliefs without taking the time to receive or entertain others' perspectives. So this is what we're dealing with, right? Just those of us who can be flummoxed, and I include myself among them. I would be wise to keep reading my book as a refresher, but understanding that the mind control, this mind virus, is locking in to unexamined, unhealed trauma. That unhealed trauma creates like cracks in the consciousness. Those cracks are vulnerabilities wherein ego fills itself out, fattened up by a lot of mind control and confusion. But this is why, this is what's inviting transmutation as we continue to move towards unity and unifying. It has to happen, guys. Like, it just has to happen. And these are the tools to do it. So thank you for being on the front lines with me and using our language to bring us back together. Defending our ideas is a deeply distorted, shadowy, masculine means of communicating that leans way light on the listening and the empathizing while digging its heels into separation consciousness. In fact, calling the practice of blindly defending our ideas a communication strategy is a leap in and of itself, given that communication is defined as the exchange of thoughts, messages, or information as by speech, signals, writing, or behavior, and that the hallmark of blindly proving ourselves right indicates a disregard for the exchange portion of the communication process that renders us open to receiving and considering other points of view. If you're confused about why I mentioned shadowy masculine means of communicating and are feeling defensive about it, then I recommend reading my book or going back in the podcast archives to find any one of my shows about the masculine feminine polarities, and then you'll know what I'm talking about and realize there's no reason to get your cute panties in a bunch. Instead of leaning into others' perspectives, this strategy pushes them away, both the ideas as well as the humans articulating them. The orientation flies in the face of healthy relatedness as it denies our fundamental unity and indicates all of zero interest in exploring said unity or honoring the people we are attempting to prove wrong as fellow humans who have come to embrace their ideas honestly and might not be the inferior brain-dead morons we're judging them to be just because they believe differently than we do. The false sense of self. We defend our ideas without pausing to consider the perspectives we are opposing when we aren't comfortable or secure enough to accept real deal diversity. That's right, I said real deal diversity, not shallow optics. It's too threatening. It's too threatening to our worldview and our sense of self. The unconscious egoic strategy goes a little something like this. If someone doesn't believe what I believe, then how do I know that my belief is valid? How do I know that I'm a good person for holding this belief? Wait, am I not a good person? What is a good person anyway? Shit, these questions are making me really uncomfortable and I hate being uncomfortable. Fuck it, I'd rather just bully this jackass into believing what I believe instead of looking at slash dealing with my own internal confusion and the self-esteem deficiency. And the self-esteem deficiency to which it is pointing. Heil hierarchy. Heil hierarchy. This is what happens when our sense of self is false, distorted, or inauthentic. We can't handle expressions of self that are different than ours, beyond the shallow optics we've been programmed to embrace as diversity. I love how my off-the-fly caveats are exactly the same as my written version. The pervasiveness of this false sense of self has reached pandemic proportions, given hierarchy's penchant for programming us to seek outside ourselves for self-worth, success, security, and happiness. When we don't source our self-worth, success, security, and happiness internally, we become dependent upon external approval to glean a false sense of self. All these falses are in parentheses, by the way. This outward grasping makes us all the easier to manipulate and control, which is the point. The global self-esteem deficiency is squelching the human spirit while preventing us from knowing ourselves whole, actualizing our potential, and expanding our consciousness, our emotional capacity, our creativity, and our genius. When we leap to defend our positions while attempting to slay those professing alternate versions, we are prioritizing ideological abstractions over our relationships with those we are engaging, instead of leaning in and attempting to forge a genuine understanding as to where they are coming from and what is informing their point of view. In terms of our hierarchical framing, we are elevating our own ideas, allegiances, and worldviews above these differing ideas, as well as the humans professing them. And there's a cute little illustration of our hierarchical podium with an idea standing on the top rung and a human being on the bottom. We can't claim to be inclusive if we are not willing to consider other people's ideas. Even if we can't authentically entertain them as our own, we can, at the very least, dig a little deeper to forge an understanding as to how other folks are coming to believe what they believe, such that we can authentically honor their beliefs as valid, even if those beliefs rub up against our own. What a concept. We get to believe different things. Proving we are right instead of seeking to understand is its own category of conflict languaging. What follows are a couple methods by which we see this practice being played out in the larger cultural exchange space, as well as in our own interpersonal discourse. Okay, so moving into the false dichotomy, we've all heard versions of this idea before, whether implicitly stated in the geopolitical sphere, e.g., if you're not with us, you're with the terrorists, or in the social justice activism space, e.g., silence is violence, or implied in the digital realms of social media, e.g., if you don't post this flag or this colored square as your profile picture, then you are an enemy of the cause. It's crazy because I read that and I'm like, it sounds so exaggerated, it sounds so over the top, and yet it's legit what we're living through. What a trip. What a trip. It is a form of ideological bullying that is rarely true while always serving to strengthen the grip of hierarchy in its reductive and wholly irrational conflict-laden divisiveness. The problem, well, one of them, is that the statement attempts to override the infinite array of potential reasons why one might not be with another's cause, and to whittle our otherwise complex, multi-layered reality into a narrow and contrived either-or scenario. It alleges that because I don't feel aligned with a specific cause or idea, or because said cause or idea is not something I am choosing to prioritize, then I am, by default, an enemy of said cause or idea. And when we get really bananas with it, of the people who stand with said cause or idea. It takes what could very well be ignorance, indifference, or neutrality and flips it into a projected anti-stance that may never have been claimed or considered. I talked about this on my last show with my friend who was strong-arming me on the Israel situation. Same. And just notice, like, it doesn't matter the cause, guys. It's just divide and conquer. I don't think it even matters to the lizards behind the scenes. It's just like, whatever. Throw some sort of false dichotomy into the human mix and watch them take the bait and eat themselves alive. It's efficient, super efficient. I wish we were smarter. I wish we were past this. Anyway, this also happened, and I've probably mentioned this before. You know what? It doesn't even matter. I'm just repeating myself, but it's like neutrality, the conflation of neutrality in today's society with this anti-stance, with this false dichotomy. It's like it becomes such a cage, such a mind cage, that they can really only, cancel clearly, that some of us can only see the world when we're under that type of mind control through the lens of this pro-anti-polarity. And because neutrality is like cognitive dissonance, like it breaks the brain and they don't know what to do with it. And some of us, cancel clearly, and some of us who are under that mind control don't know what to do with it and no longer have access to our critical thinking capacities, then we conflate neutrality with the anti and just make more and more enemies and make life suckier and suckier. Because that's really one of the telltale signs of this mind virus, is how angry and unhappy these people seem to be, in a constant state of like outrage or freak out or Cassandra hysteria. Anyway, I'm just going to pick it up from the last sentence. It takes what could very well be ignorance, indifference, or neutrality and flips it into a projected anti-stance that may never have been claimed or considered. The allegation is a standard issue logical fallacy that professional thinkers call a false dichotomy. The false dichotomy is a pitch-perfect example of how hierarchy operates. In vast sweeping generalizations and black and white extremes that polarize the populace while keeping neutrality at bay, this shadowy masculine means of thinking rejects nuance, subtleties, gray areas, and diversity while attempting to project division where it doesn't necessarily exist or belong. The false dichotomy purports that my choice to not support a pro-toddler rights march because toddler rights aren't really on my radar, and because I don't personally see the efficacy of marches, and because my attention is focused on other realms of service, becomes twisted into a fictional narrative that alleges that I hate toddlers, I am an enemy of toddlers, and I should be canceled for my assumed slash projected slash imaginary hatred of toddlers and my totally made up non-existent disdain for the toddler cause. The if you're not with us, you are against us line of erroneous reasoning requires the self-esteem deficient advocate to make continual leaps of self-aggrandizing illogic, because it infers that I care enough about the person or cause in question to align myself with or against it. The false dichotomy rebrands neutrality as conflict, placing itself front and center in everyone else's narrative instead of resting in the albeit uncomfortable possibility that no one is thinking of us, acting for or against us, or considering us at all. Like the victim languaging we will be exploring in the pages ahead, the false dichotomy is supremely narcissistic. It's the height of self-involvement to assume that just because my cause doesn't resonate with another, that this other must be then positioning herself against me. Do you see how this framing renders me the subject in this false equivalence? Either the other supports me or the other is against me. In both instances, it's all about me. I am the reference point. There is no space for neutrality or indifference. There is no room for the notion that I am simply not on said other's radar because said other is focused elsewhere, or because said other has extracted a different meaning or interpretation of the thing against which I am railing against or for which I am lobbying. When dealing in false dichotomies, the world revolves around us and our causes, and anyone who alleges to orbit differently is branded the enemy. And we got it. A new solar system with a little victim-y narcissist in the center. Let's do the better hierarchical upgrade. So in the book, every time I present a languaging pattern that isn't serving us, and I break down the why, making it easier for us to recognize and understand the programming encoded in the words, phrases, strategies, I also offer at the end better hierarchical upgrades so that we're not left hanging with what is not wise or effective for us to be saying. Instead, we have replacements at the ready so we can start creating new neural networks, better hierarchical, unifying, empowered neural networks, attuning ourselves to those frequency bands on the regular, thus programming our reality with those frequencies, thus changing the world for the better with our every word. Yes, it's really that simple. My most recent group coaching call, we were talking about self-talk and self-love, the interconnectedness between them. And one of the people on the call mentioned having a kind of habitual thought loop, what is wrong with me, right? When this person made a mistake, it went to what is wrong with me. And I offered the upgrade, the replacement, what is right with me. And this person said, is it really that simple? And I get it. It sounds dorky. It sounds overly simplistic. It sounds reductive. It sounds like a Cherry Mary Sunshine spiritual bypass. And is it really that easy? I mean, yes and no, and mostly yes, because our language is what programs the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is responsible for 95% of our experience of reality, right? So that's the guardrails that we put up. The way that we're herding our subconscious mind is everything. Like, imagine if you had a herd of sheep And you created your fencing in such a way that they move through this trajectory, these paths. There are probably a ton of other areas on your farm that the sheep don't know exists, will never experience, right? They're not going to experience the pond. They're not going to experience, the pen where you keep the emus. They're not going to experience the strawberry patch or the greenhouse, right? They're going to stay in their lane. So our words are setting up the lanes through which we're going to perceive and meet reality. So if I'm using words that are creating a lens of perception, a track, where on several times a day, every day, I'm going to be asking myself, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Within the confines of that tracking, of those fences, I'm entraining my mind to look for what's wrong with me, look for what's wrong with me. Like, so there's the implied judgment, what's wrong with you? And then there's the like assignment that's being given, like look for ways to answer my inquiry, right? What is wrong with me? Oh, I'm stupid, I'm lazy, I'm, whatever the negative stories are. When we're programming ourselves like that all day, every day, and we think we're going to change, we think our perspective is going to change. In my experience, you could do all the coaching, all the therapy, all the self-help. If we're still asking ourselves all day, every day, what's wrong with me, what's wrong with me, what's wrong with me, I don't really see that person's reality shifting into something positive. Now, when we shift the language to what's right with me, we're inviting that to be the lens of perception. This is the track upon which we're herding all of our sheep, the what's right with me track, where we're going to be looking, right? Now that's the directive, find out what's right with me. Oh, I'm kind, I'm funny, I'm soulful, I'm smart, whatever it is. And now we're going to be affirming things that are positive about ourselves in our mind. That's going to shift everything, the physiology, the emotional state, the psychological state, the energetic state, the frequencies we're radiating, what we're magnetizing and attracting in. So is it that easy? Again, yes. Now, the part where I'm going to say no, but still yes, is because it's going to show us where our work is. So if I, bungle something and then I use the upgrade, what's right with me, and I feel like a fraud when I say that, or I feel like I'm going to cry, or it somehow dysregulates me, then that's pointing me to belief systems that are inviting rewriting. It's pointing me to fragmented parts that are still needing acknowledgement and healing and integration, right? So is that part easy? I think that part takes courage. I think it's super uncomfortable. I am excited for more and more people to do it. No, I think that's the hard work. And these little languaging upgrades from what's wrong with me to what's right with me are like they're going to unlock the linchpins, right? Because if I say that and I become dysregulated, then I know that's where my work is, right? So to me, that's so super, super valuable, because how many of us, have ever done like long stints of therapy or, go nowhere coaching? We're looking for like, where am I getting in my own way? Like, what's the thing that's going to unlock my misery and allow me to heal it and move through it, right? So if we're just talking, recycling the stories, and we're not really getting to it, and I'm not knocking therapy. I know that there's some great therapists, and for sure. But as far as is it really that easy? I think it really is that easy, because these upgrades are the linchpins that unlock the trauma and show us, hey, if you want to transform, if you want to move into, more expansive realms of wholeness and happiness and empowerment and whatnot, then this is the thing that's inviting your attention and healing. That's huge. That can take years and years and years of therapy to figure out what is that thing, whereas, to be perfectly honest, a single quantum languaging session with me, I guarantee we'll find something. It'll take more than one session to find them all, and I guarantee one quantum languaging coaching session with me we'll find one of those linchpins and show you where you have the opportunity to do some integration and quantum leap yourself, easy peasy. So I'm going to stick with yes and no is my answer to, is it really that easy? Yes and no, and yes and yes and yes. Okay. Better hierarchical upgrades for moving from proving ourselves right to seeking to understand, right? This is the upgrade. Instead of communicating with a strategy of I need to be right, I need to be right, I need to be right, we come at our conversations with the intention of seeking to understand. As you can imagine, the shift from proving ourselves right to seeking to understand is more of an evolutionary leap than it is a simple languaging upgrade. There's no one lexicon replacement that is going to instantly transmute the urge to prove ourselves right into a genuine openness to / curiosity about other people's perspectives. That being said, witness mode is our friend. When we are operating in witness mode, we observe the urge to defend ideas and perspectives instead of taking action on any such urges. We rest in the feminine and simply witness how we show up in our exchanges. Are we genuinely interested in others' ideas? Are we allowing ourselves to receive their words without racing to combat them with our own? What happens if when we resist the urge to counter another's ideas and simply rest in the spaciousness of listening and allowing? Let us challenge ourselves to cultivate our feminine listening skills, to receive others' ideas and perspectives without leaping to offer our own versions. And when we are faced with ideas and perspectives that do rub up against our own, before we leap to defend and counter, let us consider the following questions. What if this perspective is valid? What if this idea could coexist with my own without anyone needing to be wrong? What kind of internal self-reorganization is necessary for me to hold this idea as valid and A-okay? What kind of inner work am I being called to do within myself to be able to honor this perspective? So this concludes our language of betterarchy lesson on false dichotomies. And I'm so looking forward to the swift eradication of so many of them in the cultural landscape. It's lame. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to check out the second half, you can find that over on both my Locals and my Patreon platforms. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. I am also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. I am making some changes to my structuring, and given Instagram's new user agreement, I'm feeling less and less aligned with continuing to post there. So my plan, goal, vision, intention for 2025 is to pick up the posting on my own blog on dannykatz.com, which is yet another reason for you to go subscribe there, because that's going to be the place for your daily doses of Danny. I'm also reminding you that holiday season is here and that books make fantastic gifts, whether it's The Language of Betterarchy, Word Up, Little Languaging Hacks for Big Change, Pop Propaganda, An Illustrated Guide, or the newly revised, updated Yes, I Am Transformational Coloring Book for kiddos, grown-ups, and everyone in between. I have got you covered. I am sure I have something for everyone on your gift-giving list. So head over to either the books section of my website or any of your online booksellers and stock up. Make sure that you are giving the very best holy days presents ever. Yet, if you're competitive like me, then you like to give the very best gifts. And I think words certainly top the list. Okay, thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.